Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hej och hjärtligt välkomna till ett nytt avsnitt av Sinnessjukt, en sömnig psykiatripodd med mig, Christian Dahlström. Idag har det äntligen blivit dags att tala med en ätstörningsexpert. Vi har ju pratat om ätstörningar vid enstaka tillfällen tidigare, bland annat i mina intervjuer med Fanny Rötlisberger förra året och Saga Bäcker för 8 år sedan, hösten 2015, där de berättat om sina erfarenheter av att leva med ätstörningar. Men jag har aldrig haft med en expert i bemärkelsen någon som behandlar och forskar på ätstörningar. Och det har jag haft dåligt samvete för, måste jag säga. Ett problem som kanske kan ursäkta mig lite grann i alla fall är att det inte verkar finnas så många bra populärvetenskapliga böcker om ätstörningar på svenska. Jag har frågat efter sådana vid ett par tillfällen, inte minst när lyssnare har önskat det här ämnet, men ingen har kunnat rekommendera en enda. Jag vill ju såklart alltid göra bra research inför intervjuer för att kunna ställa initierade frågor. Det finns i och för sig en del självbiografiska böcker och romaner om ätstörningar på svenska, till exempel Marit Sahlströms utmärkta verklighetsbaserade roman Och runt mig faller världen som jag läste förra året. Det är för övrigt den jag syftar på i en fråga i dagens avsnitt med experten som jag snart ska presentera. Den boken handlar om en tjej vars 3 yngre systrar alla drabbas av anorexia. Det är en väldigt bra men becksvart skildring av anorexia. Dagens gäst är den amerikanska psykologen och psykologiprofessorn Cynthia Bulick, och det var faktiskt min förra gäst Amir Sariaslan som rekommenderade henne varmt när vi pratade efter intervjun med honom i Oxford i maj. Den intervjun handlar ju för övrigt om psykiatrisk genetik, och om ni vill veta mer om det ämnet när ni hört den här intervjun, där vi ju bland annat kommer att prata om hur ärftligt ätstörningar är, ja, då finns den intervjun med Amir i de 4 avsnitten precis innan detta. Cynthia Bulick har varit verksam i det här fältet i över 40 år, både som behandlare och forskare, och har forskat på många olika aspekter av ätstörningar, men kanske framförallt på just genetiken. Hon är professor på både University of North Carolina, där hon bor numera, och på Karolinska institutet här i Stockholm, där hon har bott tidigare. Det var även på Karolinska jag fick chansen att intervjua henne under ett besök hon gjorde i Sverige nu i september. Cynthia har varit verksam även på Nya Zeeland. Hon har vunnit oräkneliga priser för sin forskning och är ofta med i de största amerikanska nyhetsprogrammen och pratar om ätstörningar. Som här till exempel i CNN, där hon kommenterar ett uppmärksammat uttalande om överviktiga barn av Michelle Obama.
And I think that's what some people might be worried about. If we start focusing too much on numbers on a scale or use terms like going on a diet, that's when people are worried that we're just going to start getting kids obsessed about their weight. And that's not the direction that Mrs. Obama hopes that we go.
Det är alltså en av världens främsta experter på ätstörningar ni ska få lyssna på nu, och inför intervjun frågade jag Cynthia om hon kunde rekommendera någon av hennes egna böcker att läsa inför vårt möte. Hon rekommenderade då Midlife Eating Disorders från 2013. Den är på engelska och handlar främst om ätstörningar bland medelålders personer, som titeln avslöjar. Men jag rekommenderar verkligen alla som är intresserade av ätstörningar att läsa den oavsett ålder. Om ni vill veta mer om boken så kan ni läsa min lite längre recension av den som jag har publicerat inför det här avsnittet. Länk finns i avsnittsbeskrivningen. Köper ni boken via någon av länkarna i recensionen så går dessutom ett par kronor till mig och inte minst mina bolån. Fy fan. Intervjun är i 4 delar. Det är ganska mycket information att ta in, så det blir lite kortare delar så att vi alla hänger med. Den första delen som ni ska få idag inleds som vanligt med en faktaruta. Sen berättar Cynthia om hur hon först blev intresserad av ätstörningar och om de freudianska ovetenskapliga teorierna som dominerade i slutet av 70-talet då hon började studera psykologi, där man skyllde ätstörningar på familjen och där en av behandlingarna var så kallad parentektomi, där man helt enkelt inte lät barnen träffa sina föräldrar under flera månader. Vi kommer även in på anorexia, där vi får höra både om grundsymptomen och symptomen bortom diagnoskriterierna, men också om hur allvarligt sjuk man kan bli och om hur kroppsuppfattningen påverkas. I del 2 sen fortsätter vi att prata om anorexia och kroppsuppfattning. Vissa patienter är väl medvetna om att de är för smala och jag frågar Cynthia ifall den medvetenheten kan variera över tid. Jag frågar även ifall det stämmer att anorexia är den psykiska sjukdomen med högst dödlighet. Det blir lite mer om anorexia även i slutet av intervjun i del 3 och 4 där vi pratar om behandling. Men i del 2 övergår vi sen till bulimi. Även där pratar vi om grundsymptomen eller diagnoskriterierna om man så vill, men också om symptom bortom de här diagnoskriterierna. Dessutom pratar vi om hur allvarligt bulimi kan bli och om att bulimi ofta inte får lika mycket uppmärksamhet som anorexia, samt om vad som skiljer bulimi från diagnosen anorexia med hetsätning eller självrensning. Del 2 fortsätter sen med den vanligaste ätstörningen av alla, hetsätningsstörning, som länge faktiskt inte ens var en egen diagnos. Vi pratar om varför det var så och sen bland annat om kopplingen mellan hetsätningsstörning och bantning och om skammen som hetsätningsstörning ofta för med sig. Efter det pratar vi mer generellt om ätstörningar. Jag frågar exempelvis på ett ofint vis huruvida forskning om ätstörningar ligger efter annan psykiatriforskning. Men jag frågar också ifall hennes egen forskning om genetik har ändrat hennes uppfattning om hur skadligt det är med reklam och annat som påverkar vår kroppsuppfattning. Sist i del 2 får vi dessutom expertfrågorna som den här gången kommer från ingen mindre än forskaren och överläkaren Lotta Borg Skoglund som frågar om kopplingen mellan NPF och ätstörningar, vilket var väldigt intressant. I del 3 kommer vi in lite på genetik. Hur ärftliga är ätstörningar jämfört med andra psykiska sjukdomar? Vi pratar även om en av Cynthias och kollegors senaste studier som publicerades i Nature i juli i år om den genetiska skillnaden mellan anorexi och persistent thinness, som jag inte hittade någon svensk term för, men som innebär att man är väldigt smal helt enkelt men har svårt att gå upp i vikt trots att man ofta vill det. Jag frågar även ifall man ärver en sårbarhet för specifika ätstörningar eller ätstörningar i stort. Dessutom pratar vi en del om fördomen om att det bara är tonårstjejer som drabbas av ätstörningar, att diagnostiken utgår från tjejer och att killar därför kanske förbises ibland, om att medelålders personer med ätstörningar har lättare att dölja dem för omgivningen, vilket också förstärker den här fördomen om att det bara är tonårstjejer som drabbas. Vi pratar även om kopplingen mellan läkemedelsmissbruk och ätstörningar och kommer även in på behandlingar, där jag frågar Cynthia varför hon tycker att det är så angeläget att involvera anhöriga i återhämtningen från en ätstörning. Jag frågar även där varför så många med ätstörningar inte känner sig förtjänta av att få hjälp, vilket ofta tyvärr är det första hindret på vägen. Alla de här 3 första delarna är tillgängliga gratis tack vare poddens just nu över 300 patroner som genom att betala varje månad gör podden möjlig. Det 4:e och sista avsnittet är Patreon-exklusivt, men Tanken är inte att stänga ut den som exempelvis är svårt sjuk och inte har råd att betala. Tanken är att den som kan betala för sig ska göra det. Så om du verkligen inte har råd, trots att medlemskapet är billigt och man själv kan välja nivå efter plånbok och dessutom då få signerade ex av mina böcker och tavlor och så om man väljer högre nivåer. Men om man inte har råd så kan man skicka ett DM till mig på Twitter exempelvis, så fixar jag det åt er. Det gäller för övrigt alla avsnitt, även om jag tror att jag glömde säga det senaste intervjun med Amir Sariaslan. Det fjärde avsnittet handlar i varje fall om behandlingar som sagt. Jag frågar vad som oftast motiverar folk att söka hjälp, varför man ofta får bakslag längs vägen och hur man undviker allvarliga bakslag. Jag frågar även vad ett behandlingsteam består av för olika specialister och varför, samt vilka psykoterapier som fungerar och hur de går till, varför Cynthia tycker att man ska fråga sin terapeut vilken erfarenhet de har, vilka mediciner som fungerar, om det finns andra behandlingar än psykoterapi och medicin och vilken prognos man har för att bli frisk när man väl får behandling. Sist men inte minst frågar jag varför Cynthia understryker att man aldrig ska ge upp även om man har testat flera behandlingar och till och med samma behandling flera gånger. Hon berättar också om ett eget fall med en patient som hade provat alla möjliga behandlingar utan framgång men som hon och patienten till sist lyckades få att tillfriskna. Så det blir en hoppfull avslutning där Cynthia även får berätta ifall hon tror att fler effektiva behandlingar kommer snart. Som ni märker blev det inga lyssnarfrågor den här gången. Det var dels på grund av tidsbrist men också för att jag var så överjävligt nervös inför den här intervjun om jag ska vara ärlig. Men med det sagt så har det blivit dags att träffa professor Cynthia Bjulik från Karolinska institutet den 8 september i år och vi börjar som sagt med en faktaruta. Age?
63.
Family?
Yes.
Where do you live?
I live in Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
Education?
I have a PhD in clinical psychology from the University of California at Berkeley.
Salary?
Complicated, given that I work in two countries. We'll just pass on that question.
Yeah, okay. What has been the happiest period of your life so far?
Probably the childbearing years when my children were born.
What has been the worst period of your life so far?
COVID.
Have you had any psychiatric diagnosis?
Nope.
Have you ever been in psychotherapy?
Absolutely. You have to be in psychotherapy when you get a PhD in clinical psychology.
Do you have a role model?
That's a very good question. I do not.
What's your greatest professional achievement?
Probably having received 3 Lifetime Achievement Awards.
That's great. And what car do you drive?
I have a Honda CR-V.
Do you have a motto?
I have a what?
Motto, personal motto in life.
Yes, but it's not repeatable in front of the microphone.
Okay. When was the last time you cried?
Last time I cried?
Yep.
Today in my office.
Oh.
It was a happy cry, though.
Happy cry, okay.
Yeah.
When was the last time you got drunk?
I obviously cannot remember back that far. It's been a very, very long time. I have no idea.
Okay. Have you ever had a criminal record?
No.
What do you read?
I read books. I read lots of scientific journal articles. And every day I read 4 newspapers.
What do you listen to?
I have a very eclectic sort of music choice. So everything from reggaeton to classical.
What do you watch?
My guilty pleasure is I watch a lot of Spanish language telenovelas.
Okay. That's the first time in this podcast, but that's great. What do you use your smartphone for?
Interestingly, only text messages and emails, and occasionally Snapchats of my grand puppies.
Thank you so much for squeezing me into your busy schedule. I know you used to live in Stockholm, but what brings you back to Stockholm this time?
So
The agreement that we had with the Karolinska Institutet was I had a 10-year contract in which I spent 50% of the time in North Carolina and 50% of the time here at Karolinska. And this is the 10th year.
Okay. And you have dedicated over 4 decades of your life to this field. But what sparked your interest in studying eating disorders in the first place?
Sure. It was sort of a coincidence. So I started doing research on childhood depression. And the man I was working with was asked to write a chapter comparing sleep patterns in kids with depression and kids with anorexia. And I didn't know anything about anorexia. So I shadowed a psychiatrist on a specialized eating disorders inpatient unit. And I was just intrigued because I was pretty young at the time. And the people who were hospitalized were mostly women. They were around my age, but they were absolutely emaciated, yet they thought they were fat. And I just said, this is a problem that needs to be solved. I want to work with these folks. And the reason it was interesting to me is because I was also a competitive figure skater, and I realized that I had seen a bunch of people going through this, but it hadn't been named. No one talked about it, and they would just disappear from the ice, and they wouldn't come back to training anymore. And so I realized like my professional interests and my sport interests merged, and that became my professional life.
Okay. And looking back, families were for many years blamed for causing eating disorders. One treatment was even called parentectomy, where children suffering from eating disorders were separated from their parents. How much has this field changed since you began studying psychology in the late 70s?
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
I call those the dark years of psychology, and they're even worse things. In fact, we were talking about this the other day, that one of the old theories about anorexia nervosa was a fear of oral impregnation.
Yeah.
So that somehow you would get impregnated orally and that these people stopped eating because they didn't want to get pregnant. And that was horrible, and it made no sense to me. But the parent blaming, I think, did so much damage for so long. And parents were blamed. Mothers were blamed. They said that there was like too much enmeshment in the families when everybody was up in each other's business. But in reality, these parents were just so worried about their children. The hardest thing as a parent, I mean, our job as parents is to feed our children and help them grow. And when a child stops eating, that is terrorizing for parents, and they don't know what to do. And we saw those parents when they were coming in saying, I don't know what to do. So I can't tell you the number of patients and parents that we've had who have been blamed for their kids' illness. The field has completely transformed. And now we know that parents can be our best allies in treatment and our best allies in recovery. So now whenever we can, we engage parents in the treatment process.
Yeah. I read you somewhere that you almost had bad feelings about yourself believing in this family, because everyone, I guess, did back then.
Yeah. I mean, it was like, I mean, it's not, the first time I taught about eating disorders at an undergraduate level, I taught these theories. And when I look back, I'm like, oh, I wish I could like call up every student that was in the classroom and I can go, no, don't believe any of that stuff. But that's all we knew at that point. That's all there were theories. And most of them were actually developed by psychologists and psychiatrists who lived in areas where a lot of very wealthy people lived and they were able to get there for treatment. So they were only seeing a small slice of the people who were actually being sort of like suffering from the illness. So yes, I apologize to all those people who learned about these theories that really don't hold water at all.
No. I'm studying a lot of psychoanalyst history, and I get the sense that was a lot of psychoanalystic theories that were behind those things.
No, exactly. I mean, that's where it all came from. And, you know, when I was learning how to be a therapist, how to do therapy, I was supervised by a lot of people who were analysts. And I listened to their suggestions about what I should do. And they were telling me things. I'll tell you a story. So I had this one patient who was very ill. She had bulimia and she had alcohol abuse. And she was showing up in the emergency room on the weekends because she was binge drinking and she was binge eating and she was underweight. And we were doing this therapy, not talking about the symptoms, very psychoanalytically oriented psychotherapy. And my supervisor, she used to smoke during supervision, would, you know, drag on her cigarette and say, oh, what a great interpretation. You're doing such good work with this person. And I was like responding to her and going, but she was in the emergency room last week, so I'm not thinking that's a success. So I actually ended up switching supervisors yeah. and taking a more cognitive behavioral approach to treatment. And then we could really focus on stabilizing the symptoms and getting this person well.
Yeah. And the most well-known eating disorder is probably anorexia. But for those who might not be familiar, can you just tell me a little bit about the core symptoms of anorexia?
Sure. So the core symptoms of anorexia nervosa are being very underweight, losing a lot of weight, or if you're still growing, not gaining weight to compensate for your growth. Often people will still see themselves as large, even though they're emaciated. So they have a very strong drive for thinness. Women often, but not always, will stop menstruating. And, you know, it's going off the diagnostic categories. I think one of the difficult things about anorexia nervosa is people just do not see themselves accurately, not just their shape and size, but also who they are as a person and their accomplishments. Their self-esteem tends to be absolutely horrible, even if they're highly accomplished people.
Yeah, and you describe anorexia as a perplexing and harrowing disorder that comes in a variety of presentations and degrees of severity. Can you tell us a little bit about these variations?
Yeah. So some people with anorexia nervosa get to that low weight only by restricting their food intake and increasing their energy output, so excessive exercise. There's a subgroup of people who do those behaviors, but also have periods of binge eating and or purging. So binge eating is eating an unusually large amount of food and feeling out of control when you do it. It's that combination. It's not just overeating like we all do every once in a while, but it's that sense of once you start eating, you can't stop. And then that can often be coupled with purging. So that can be self-induced vomiting, it can be laxative use, or other ways to sort of counteract the effect of a binge.
Yeah. I recently read a book about a woman whose three sisters all suffered from anorexia, and she described it as if the disorder had taken on a life of its own. What initially was just a drive for being thin later became almost like a demon that had taken possession of her sisters. That's at least that's how she described it. Have you heard this or similar descriptions before?
Absolutely. And I think parents will say that as well. Another word that I've heard used often is that anorexia hijacked my daughter, my partner, my wife, whatever it might be. But it really does get to the point where you have to separate out the person from the disorder. And anorexia nervosa can have a very loud and demanding voice. And it really does. Parents will say, like, this is not my child. This is not the child I knew last week. Suddenly something clicked or a switch went off and they became someone else. And then that's what we hope for through recovery, is that they can get their person back again. But still, there's always sort of that legacy of having gone through anorexia nervosa in the past.
Yeah. You touched upon it a little bit earlier, but in addition to this diagnostic criteria, you also describe in your book hallmark features of anorexia as a paralyzing sense of perfectionism, low self-esteem, anxiety in childhood, depression, self-consciousness, and preoccupation with symmetry and exactness. And I don't know, but it seems to me almost like a cocktail of traits from several other mental disorders. Or how would you describe it? Is that fair?
No, I think that's an interesting way of looking at it. And what we know from a lot of the genetic research that we're doing is that anorexia is related to other psychiatric disorders on a genetic level. In fact, the strongest correlation is between anorexia and obsessive compulsive disorder. And I think you mentioned a couple of things like symmetry and exactness and perfectionism. Yeah. And those are classically part of OCD.
Yeah.
And we see that so often in people with anorexia nervosa. We also see it in their family members. So people who have anorexia nervosa have an increased risk of family members having depression, anxiety, OCD. Absolutely.
Yeah, but it's also the like delusions and almost like a psychotic dimension in some sense, right?
Yeah, that's one of the sort of more controversial ways of interpreting the experience of anorexia.
Okay.
But they do, I mean, when it comes down to it, they do perceive reality differently than the rest of us do. And I have had patients who said things that sounded very delusional, you know, like after they would eat a meal, they would actually see their thighs spreading or they would feel their stomach getting bigger. And, you know, most of us, if we eat a meal, you know, we feel our pants getting a little bit tighter, but their experience is much bigger and much more exaggerated and much scarier than that of a healthy person.
Yeah. And talking about that, in your book, you describe a 50-year-old woman with anorexia who thought she looked fat when she was younger, but had long since kind of realized how thin she is. Instead, her problem was that she couldn't eat, and her feelings and fears about food and calories and so on were just too strong. How common is it that someone with anorexia does not have a distorted body size perception?
It's interesting because in different cultures, the core of anorexia nervosa tends to be the same. That is the low weight, the restriction, and sometimes the increased activity. But we don't necessarily see the body preoccupation across all cultures. It's the drive for thinness is strong everywhere, but that same body focus is not necessarily always there, especially we've seen that in Asian cultures. And we've also seen, and this is sort of like a newer development on the anorexia side, but there's a new label that people are using that we don't love, and we're hoping people are going to change it, that is called atypical anorexia nervosa.
Okay.
And these are people who are in, well, either they haven't lost as much weight as necessary to meet the formal diagnostic criteria, so they've got all the rest of the symptoms of anorexia, but their weight isn't quite that low.
Okay.
Or it's people who actually are living in larger bodies but are starving themselves.
Okay.
So they're engaging in the same types of behavior, and even though they're large, functionally they're starving. And they often have many of the same medical complications as people with anorexia nervosa. So we're hoping that that name will eventually be changed to restrictive eating disorders. Because whenever you call something atypical, it's almost like it's not bad enough to be typical.
And
it doesn't do anybody any good to call it that. I just don't like the label of atypical. So yeah, I kind of went down a different path there. But
Där har ni den första delen av den här fyrdelade intervjun med Cynthia Bulick, en av världens främsta experter på ätstörningar. Ena dagen sitter man i CNN och kommenterar Michelle Obama. Andra dagen träffar man en misslyckad entreprenör från Ektorp. Livets kontraster, hörni. Jag passar på att tipsa om Cynthias fantastiska bok Midlife Eating Disorders som ni hittar på länken i avsnittsbeskrivningen. I den recensionen hittar ni för övrigt även en köplänk till Marit Sahlströms nämnda bok som jag också kan rekommendera varmt. Innan vi skiljs åt vill jag bara en sista gång påminna om att Mental Health Run går av stapeln nu på lördag i Stockholm eller virtuellt 1-10 oktober var du än är i världen. I North Carolina, på Karolinska institutet, i Amazonas djungler, i Orminge centrum, var som helst helt enkelt. Du behöver absolut inte springa heller. Det går jättebra att gå eller rulla eller ta sig fram hur du vill. Jag såg att någon skulle paddla kajak virtuellt exempelvis. Det gör man som man vill. Mentalhealthfront.se för mer info och anmälan. Allt överskott går till mer forskning. Till exempel faktiskt till en forskare som nämns senare i intervjun. Lisa Dinkler som forskar med Cynthia och är en av alla forskare som fick stipendium i år av Fonden för psykisk hälsa till hennes forskning om ARFID eller undvikande restriktiv ätstörning som det heter på svenska. Jag arbetar ju lite för fonden som ni vet, så jag är partisk här, men det är en folkfest som jag sprang många gånger innan jag fick det uppdraget också. Okej, kära vänner, ta hand om varandra där ute nu, så hörs vi snart igen. Puss och kram, hej då!
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.